Welcome to Westgate Messages Plus, where we share our Sunday messages and bonus content. We hope you enjoy this deeper dive into God's Word and how it transforms our everyday lives. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Message Plus panel discussion with Kevin Meyer and Rob Compton and Peter Kapsner. This is number three in a series, Kevin, that we've been working through as part of the Genesis series at Westgate. And in the first one, we talked a little bit about the intersection of science and the origins of the earth and how we understand Scripture's reliability in light of those things. Last week, we talked a bit about evil and suffering and the origin of that. And this week, one that's surprisingly confusing, I think, for a lot of people, and again, understandably so, is we have this passage in Genesis that talks about the fact that God created these human beings who are meant to bear his image on earth. There's a very unique description of them compared to the rest of creation. And it all sounds fine when you first hear, well, they're bearing God's image. Right. But as soon as you hear that phrase, I think, what does that even mean? So I know you want to start by at least reading the scripture of it, and then we'll go from there.
So when we look at that Genesis account, you want to say that the sixth day is the climax of creation. In a sense, the real climax of it all is really the seventh day. I mean, that's where it all kind of ends, but we won't be talking about that. But we will talk about that sixth day when we actually talk about things created. That high point is when you read, after God has made the animals, he says, then let us make human beings in our image. And again, that let us is he referring to the Trinity, or is it this kind of divine king who, you know, they speak in the sense of a plural? What is it again? Majestic plural, I think.
I think that sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, so this let us, this God says, let us make human beings in our image to be like us, and they will reign over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, the livestock, all the wild animals on the earth and the small animals that scurry along the ground. And then there's this piece of poetry here. So God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of ends that part. Then God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and govern it, reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, and all the animals that scurry along the ground. So as it says, God created human beings in his own image.
Mm. Rob, first thought, just free association, first thoughts. You hear the passage, what are some of the things that come to mind?
Yeah, kind of framing that up from a technological background. When I hear the word image, I think of optics. I think of how, Kevin, you're sitting there, but I can pull up my camera and I can create an image of you on the camera. And that
through that digital process.
Through that digital processing, the light goes into the lens, yep. And the lens focuses it down onto the CCD chip, and that image is not you, but it's a representation of you. It's right. Meant to capture some aspects of you. And one of the things we should say is that that image, in some ways, you know, there's a reality to that, but that reality does not exist apart from you. Mm-hmm. And so when I hear the word image, God is spirit, right? And he made this physical reality, and he made the physical reality to be an image of spiritual reality. And so we kind of have this idea sometimes, you know, we're meat and potatoes people here in the Midwest, that physical reality, that's solid, that's stuff we can trust. Spiritual reality, we're not so sure that's really real. And so this really reverses that story and says, look, spirit, that's solid, that's substance. And the physical world that we put so much trust in, that's a little more ethereal. And be careful that you have your foundations in the right place.
Well, I think that's interesting you say that, because I do agree. I mean, it's, when you talk about the spirit, there is a sense that, you know, we are sitting around a table here, and if we look into science and physics and all, I mean, this is just a bunch of what?
Molecules
held together,
atoms.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. But we are fooled in the sense that they actually are substance. One of the things about history is that with regard to the church and throughout history, physical things have been looked at not only as less than, but often even sinful, you know, in a sense that it's not spirit. And theologically, you know, this idea if we can just get rid of our physical, that which holds us back, et cetera. But what's interesting in what you had said and what came to mind is that when Jesus was resurrected and he ascended and exalted into heaven, he brought our physical bodies. It was a physical resurrection. It yes. wasn't just yeah. a spirit yeah. that went up, mm. which tells us something about even the image of God and how important that is, that we represent that image physically, and it was very good.
Yeah. Well, my head is still blown, Compton, about the idea. You're a quantum physicist who actually believes in the unseen world of the spirit. I don't even know what to do with this. Aren't you supposed to be skeptical of all such things?
You know, I would be a better scientist if I had a better imagination.
I love that. Well, one of the things that I don't fully understand is, Kevin, there is this great command. I won't say I don't fully understand it. Things I've puzzled over, I would say, is he gives us the command to guard and to tend or to reign over, however we want to understand the language. It clearly is not an exploitative ruling over language, but what does it mean to bear God's divine image? Is it a functional thing? Is it a visible thing? Is it a how we are sort of thing? Is it what we do sort of, you know what I mean? I just hear a lot of different angles at this.
Really, really good question. If I was to say, you know, what comes to mind for me, I think of a coin that is the image of someone on it. And the idea is that it isn't that person, but it does represent them. Or you just take that word and say represents them as an aspect of who they are. And so when I think of that image, in the way when you again look at ancient Near Eastern cultures, at that point, only the king represented the image of the gods. It wasn't all the people, it was the king. And the way the king would use his image is if it would be like at very strategic boundaries or in cities that he had conquered, he would put his image there as a way to represent his being so that they knew he was in charge and he was the one that was overseeing all this. So God, who is spirit, in making us in his image, physical beings, in some way represents himself through us over this creation. Yeah. What that all means, he says some of it. You are to continue with this creative work that I've started. I've given you a free will to enter in. I've made you a powerful person. You've been empowered because of my very existence to be able to do things on my behalf, to take animals, it says in the sixth day, and they come up before him and he names them and sees their function. There's a discernment on it. He's doing what God could have done himself. God says, let there be, gives room for us to act. He doesn't, you know, say, Adam, you're this, and I want you to name him that. He allows for that expression of their creativity, their will, their power. So that's one aspect I think of when I think of image.
Well, and Rob, as a scientist, I'm sure that you both see the angles of what has been, or you kind of at least examine how did this come to be and how do these things work. But I would imagine you see the possibility that things get created and new things are being developed all the time. I mean, when I think about being co-creators, I do wonder sometimes about what level of agency do we have to co-create with God, and what does this look like? How do you look at that through the lens of science?
Yeah, and I would call that technology. And clearly God gave us incredible gifts, and so that idea of stewardship that you talked about, Kevin, with naming the animals, zoology, you know, that was a beginning, but we can trace the development of technology all the way, you know, up from ancient days, and now we're talking about artificial intelligence, and we're talking about gene splicing, and incredible, incredible power that God has given us, with the expectation that we act in accordance with His purposes and His designs, and so. You know, man, that gets dicey, real quick when, you know, you start talking about the ability to destroy ourselves, the ability, He's given us enough power that we could destroy what He created. Yeah. Mm. That's the kind of power that we steward.
Yeah.
I sometimes think that the Babel story is somewhat instructive on this, where you can, where human beings can take the power to create in the way that they've been afforded, and they can use that power to defy and resist or create their own kingdom to vie against the God of heaven, which is what we see in the Babel story. But to have power to create is not intrinsically a bad thing. The question is do we have the reins of God that are sort of guiding or the bit of his hand in our mouth that is helping us do the creation process?
Right. Yeah, I think of that, and I think also if we continue just to think about the image of God and we talk about it representing so that we kind of are those icons of God, in a sense. We are the ones that oversee and steward this world that we're in. But we're also told something about the fact of our own sense of dignity. And I had mentioned this about, you know, in that ancient Near Eastern culture, and I think I would say the author of Genesis is trying to make clear here, is he doesn't say kings, which they would have expected, I think. He says mankind, humanity, are all created in the image of God. With all this moral and spiritual and intellectual capacities and things that would go with that. But along with that is a sense of dignity, a sense of our value, a sense of our worth. And we are all of worth in God's eyes. Every person who's listening to this, regardless of our gender or race or our background or any of those things, which in many ways, when this was being written in Genesis, was a new concept.
Mm-hmm.
That was not the case, and it's still a new concept for many today, even in our world that we live in.
Well, and I would say this too, and you probably see this in just your work at times, Rob. I'm sure we all feel this way, but so often we reduce one another to transactions, or we reduce one another to what can you do for me, and we just don't. I don't necessarily wake up in the morning, or maybe I should enter into my day and say, God, let me see the value and the dignity of another human being because they come from you. And that doesn't mean that then I bypass all of the evil things in the world that we all participate in, but let me at least start with a baseline that recognizes the inherent dignity of every person that I meet in that day.
Yeah, you know, and what comes to mind is just, you know, you start out in business sometimes, and the customer is, you know, somebody that you care about and somebody that you want to serve and somebody that you want to, you really care that the things that you're doing as a business person matter to your customer. And then you start worrying about the bottom line, and then you start worrying about how can I get more money out of that customer. And what started out as a beautiful relationship, you know, goodness of work again, become something that's completely transactional, and we lose both the dignity of our customers and the dignity of our employees and colleagues.
Mm. Let me throw out just a quick verse to the two of you, just for some reaction. And I think, Kevin, just knowing a bit about your heart and what you care about for the Westgate community and the kind of people we are, with God being unseen and we're these sort of physical representing expressions of God on earth, it's a verse I've never really spent a lot of time with, but I've seen it in passing, and I'm getting a little bit more anchored in it, where it's 1 John 4:12, and it says, no one has ever seen God, okay? So nobody's ever this unseen being, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. And it's a passage that it just made me think, so I don't know what the Trinitarian life of God is like, but I would imagine it's governed by love within the Trinitarian life. It talks about God is love.
Yeah.
And so maybe in our representing of God, like how important it is for his image bearers, and especially in a faith community like Westgate, that what we are operating in, first and foremost, if we want to present God to the world, is love for one another.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, we often say it, kind of the culture we're building is that everyone's welcome, nobody's perfect, anything's possible, which gives you this sense of, and what we want to see happen is this sense that we want to love like Jesus loved. We want the image of our Father, God, who has this incredible love for the Son and the Holy Spirit, and that kind of community that he creates, to be the kind of community that we're creating as well. Obviously, nobody's perfect, and so there is where forgiveness and all these other graces of God come into it. But as I think about that, and I love that verse, I'm glad you brought that up, I didn't even come to mind, is one of the incredibly important aspects of the image of God is that love. Again, if you just even think of the fruits of the Spirit, some have said, you know, it's love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, and, you know, trails off with all these. Some have said it's love which is joy, which is
peace,
patience. And this idea that love encapsulates all that, and love actually encapsulates what we've talked about too, that we have agency, because only in love can you love if there is someone who also has agency in that sense to love back, or at least a relational kind of love that we're talking about. And so I think that's here's what I love about that passage. I've used that passage before in a marriage setting, and that is we at Westgate, or you, whatever church you may go to, or if you're not in one, in relationship with other people, here's what I want to get across. As you love one another, in the fullness of that, people see God.
Mm, yeah.
That's the only way. You know, no one's seen him, but you will see God. And he doesn't say, he's going to see it in you, Peter. It really is much more of a communal
kind of,
when you love like this, people are going to see God.
Well, and maybe I misinterpreted what I observed last night. We're taping this episode on a Thursday, and last night was Wednesday, so it was youth group night at Westgate. And and I walked in, and Rob, maybe I misinterpreted what I saw as genuine love, even while it looked like you guys were beating each other up in the gymnasium. But I watched you with the gear and all of it, and it was just lovely to watch all of you play last night.
I was getting my butt kicked by some kids who are 30 years younger than me. But that was love, and... yeah, you know, I love the way, so at Westgate, I think we have this growing sense of the importance of community, that that my relationship with Jesus is not just me and Jesus, me and my Bible, but that it's us together, mm-hmm. and that hesed love that we talk about, mm-hmm. the loving kindness, as that word is interpreted, that is something that is within our body, within our community. One of my struggles, and maybe this is because I'm such a sort of a concrete, technological, scientific mind, one of my struggles has been feeling that sense of connection to Jesus, directly to Jesus as this spirit who is, you know, sitting at the right hand of God, but also with me. But when I look into your eyes, Peter, when I look into your eyes, Kevin, I see Jesus there. Yeah. And, and so for me, you know, it's within us as a community. Somebody looking in from outside sees Jesus, sees the Spirit at work, but also it is me growing into Christ-likeness so that Jesus can look out of my eyes and that I can feel what he feels for you and for others and have that same sense of love that I receive from others.
Yeah, I think that's powerful.
Yeah, well, and if I can just stand there for just a second, I think just one thing I want to, again, highlight that you said that's really important is over the years, there are believers that really seem to have an easy sense of God's presence that they attend to and is a really manifested part of their day. And I think sometimes those people, they get elevated as having sort of some secret sauce in their faith versus others, as opposed to just sort of a giftedness of God's presence in some ways. But what you just said, I think, gives us an incredible invitation for those of us that don't necessarily seem to as readily or as easily experience God's presence. But within the love of all of that, that is the primary expression of kingdom life. We are experiencing God in the love for one another.
Yes.
Even if it isn't, which is still reliable. I think the intangible presence of God is still a very reliable thing, but it doesn't have to be the thing that proves that you're a Christian versus not. Just the animated love within all of us is an incredible invitation.
It doesn't seem like in many ways the direction and posture of all the epistles, the letters written to churches in cities, which were house churches, it was always about this community. And if this community, as it's connected to Christ because of his forgiveness, will be connected to one another in such a way that this community, by its love, makes known who Jesus is and who the Father is. And I think Jesus said that as he was near the end of his life before he went to the cross. His disciples are asking him about how they should live and what they should be like. And he says, this is how people know that you're my disciples, right? This is it. In that day, those disciples of a rabbi would have marks. They'd actually have a haircut a certain way, or they would wear a patch on their robe or whatever it might be. This is what marked them off. And he says, this is the mark that everyone will know that you're one of mine and that it's love. There's no mark. There's no external mark. There's no way. And that's what we like. We like those kind of definable things that we can see. But he doesn't talk about that. He says, no, it's the kind of love that I've loved people with, that people will experience God.
Well, a fascinating parallel. And I saw you just open Philemon. So I'm not sure where you're going to go in a second, but I'm super curious. But just one last piece on that you said about being marked by it. Somebody once pointed out to me, and I don't know why I hadn't seen it previously, but I was familiar growing up with the mark of the beast, whatever that is, on people's head and on their hands. And it's sort of this mark of rebellion and how you think and the work of your hands. What I hadn't seen was that the parallel to that existed right in Deuteronomy 6, where it says that let what mark your head and your hands? It was let the love of the Lord your God. And that, of course, is being expressed in community with one another, and mark your foreheads and mark your hands with the love of God. So you have this incredible invitation to be marked in how you think and how you move by love or by rebellion. And you see that in scripture. And love does, I think, give us incredible evidence for God himself as being his representatives on earth.
Well, and that's where I was going to go to Hebrews, which is right next to Philemon.
Oh, I didn't even see. I couldn't see over the top of my computer. So Philemon is awfully short, isn't it,
sure
Kevin?
It's
one page. So now we're into Hebrews, and I know there's an important passage
here. And if we're talking about the image of God, you have to talk about Jesus.
Yes.
Who, as it says in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3, the Son is the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation, if you want to read it that way, of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word, which brings you back to Genesis and the powerful word of the Lord, our creator God. But I think of that, and it goes, if you want to see the image of God the way I intended it to be in Adam and on through all of us, just read about Jesus. Just look at Jesus. Just turn your attention to my son, and you will see the radiance of the glory, which is this love which exists within him.
When it comes to some of the daily outworkings of this and wondering about, so how does this play itself out that we're imagers as we wrap up this episode in the next few minutes, one of the questions you have, Kevin, that you wanted to at least talk about a little bit is, so how does this play itself out ethically in our decisions, or how does it play itself out in how we take care of God's earth? I think what's part of what's embedded in Genesis 1 in this invitation to guard or to tend, you know, when it says to rule over it, it just means to guard and to tend and to help bring forth the delight that God has embedded in creation. So we're co-creators in that sense, that we're constantly helping bring forth his beauty and delight. I don't know if this is heretical, but I'll try it out for the two of you. I've even thought about how evangelistic being a good gardener could be, like to plant seeds in the spring and to help bring forth the life and the beauty and the wonder of the plants and the flowers and how they point to the majesty of God. I don't know if that's a silly example, but for those of us that might struggle going into a mall and, you know, maybe sharing our faith with somebody walking by, I think to be a tender of all of God's visible and invisible ways in this world is part of what's embedded in this invitation to be an image bearer, is that we're always tending to his beautiful ways that are both in visible space and in invisible space.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. What comes to mind is, you know, we want to make the good news really good news. Mm-hmm. And so that means letting that good news work out through our bodies in such a way that we are bringing goodness into the world. We are stewarding God's resources, God's creation in ways that bring that shalom that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I would agree. And that does raise up those very questions that people will have, you know. Part of what it means to be made in the image of God, and part of what we've been tasked to do, is to care for this world. Mm-hmm. And so when people talk about, you know, how do we care for the earth around us, I mean, I'm not going to get into a political thing on either side of that, except for I don't care what side you're on. The reality is we're called to steward well this creation that God has given us. And so we need to be aware of that. I don't think we should ever shy away from saying, you know what, God called me to steward well this creation. So I remember when it used to be, in fact, I was watching some show and TV, and this couple were out, and it was back in the 60s that it was, they were kind of supposed to be in, and they got up from their picnic and they left their cans and all their paper stuff right there and just took their picnic baskets back with them. And I go, I remember that. I remember that time when we didn't care about the garbage that we would leave behind. I remember one time when my friend, as I took a wrapper of my candy bar that I had, and I threw it out the window, and he just got mad at me. He goes, "What are you doing?" And it was the first time I just kind of go, "You know what? That isn't right."
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I do need to care for what has been given to me by God, and so I do believe part of what is in the image of God is that tending and caring for this earth and its resources, and whatever that might look like.
Yeah, and I have to share something that Lisa, my wife, just shared with me last night. I haven't read it yet, but Christina Dunawan had sent Lisa a copy of a paper that Lily wrote, and it was about stewardship. And in that paper, as Lisa described it to me, Lily draws out rights and responsibility. And so as stewards, we do have some rights, and we might think that we have some rights to do things like throw our candy bar wrapper out the window. But the other side of that is the responsibility, and those have to be held in tension.
Right. Well, and I think about stories that I've heard where people have been persuaded about God because of the beauty and the wonder of what they see in the visible world. And I remember having the opportunity and privilege at our 25th wedding anniversary for Hallie and me. We spent a few days in Iceland, and we went out on this island in the southern coast of Iceland. I'm not sure what Genesis waters look like that were teeming with life and what the colors were, but I think it must have approximated that. I stood on the cliffs, and I was just taken captive by that, and it once again restored my soul. Well, maybe one last question as we wrap up this this episode, then, just to reflect on going back to this idea about how love is, when it's present, it really is representing who God is. Can you think of a person or an example or a time in your life when you just experienced love really well from somebody, where it just, I can think of a time in my life where it was really just shalom creating for me. There was an individual that no matter how, in what shape I walked into the room, that person's eyes just would twinkle with delight that I was there. And that didn't mean everything was fine with me. And in most cases, it's not. And to this day, that remains, you know, true. But when in that person's presence, when I knew that their eyes were twinkling in delight, not because of what I could bring to the table or a resume or a transaction or anything, it's amazing how my soul would just be at rest entirely. So that's my example. I don't know if you guys have some.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a few people who have done that for me over the years. One that just popped into my head first is old friend named Joe Wielden, and Joe is this guy, you know, we're always trying to outwit each other, you know, get the upper hand, use a little sarcasm. He's this guy who was always competing to give the best compliment when the rest of us were competing to give, you know,
the best compliment you give was the insult.
And really just totally changed my outlook on, hey, I could do that for people. Mm-hmm. I could point out the best in people.
Yeah. I have to say, I mean, there's been a number, but I will just, and this is going to, I don't want to sound corny, but I would say my wife. And for me, this whole process of taking responsibility for your actions and the fact that she would forgive me, and in this whole process of learning that forgiveness is really costly, and realizing I used to want to be forgiven so that we would be back to homeostasis and our relationship would be good, until I began to realize, hey, I just don't want to hurt her. And her continual love, support, and forgiveness just blows me away and gives me a picture of what it's like with Christ. And so I do believe that this idea of living in the love of God, knowing he loves you, allowing that to penetrate your heart, is just transforming. And I believe it creates the image of God even more. Or it doesn't create, it expresses the image of God, helps us release that image of God to others around us. So one of the things I do when I pray after I have time where I'm journaling and reading the Bible is I pray a number of different prayers, but I end it with this one. Today, I will live in the delight of your eyes. And then I say, Kevin, you are my son whom I love. With you, I am well pleased. And I just have to sit in that for a bit. Because to truly take in, even I know that was said of Jesus, but Jesus says that we follow in his train the same love that the Father has for his son who is perfect, he has for me, even though I don't deserve it and I am not perfect. to know that he loves me like that, that he has forgiven me like that, it does form that image more fully and express it more clearly, I think, as I live my life.
I think a great way to wrap that up with what you said, Kevin, and going back to 1 John again 4, where it says, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love comes from God, and everyone who loves like that has been born of God and knows God." This is our primary way of knowing God and seeing his image on earth. Well, fellas, this has been a great 3 weeks of Message Plus panel discussions on the different topics of Genesis. This one was about divine image bearers. Of course, we covered a little bit about the origin of evil and the intersection of science and Genesis. Great series.
And Peter, I got to say thank you so much for allowing us to be in the Palatial Studios, the Kapsner Studios.
Not everybody makes the cut, Meyer.
This is unbelievable.
You have my Venmo, and I do expect.
I want to tell you. I mean, those of you who are listening, if you could just see this, unbelievable.
It's been a joy to have you guys down here. Rob, I just have to say I'm jealous. You definitely have a voice made for radio. It's the best voice among the three of us by far.
All right, thank you.
I agree.
It's great stuff. Thanks again for listening, everybody, and we'll do more of these in the future for Westgate.